is March 7th, and this is Robin Mejia, still here with Makoto Kuro in his office at UT Southwestern. Second tape of March 7th,
okay.
Your oral history interview. This is when it's transcribed. So you were telling me about submitting to Nature, the first round of rejections. Did you submit it anywhere else, or were you kind of determined?
Well, no, I don't care about the journal, but I believe that the paper was, I think, very interesting because it was the first example again for the lifespan extension in the mouse simply overexpressing a single gene. So it could be very interesting. So because I didn't have any good publication for 4 or 5 years, so I really need a good publication. So anyway, I wanted to publish in a very good journal.
Okay.
Anyway, and unfortunately, I resubmitted the paper to Science, and they accepted it. I know it's as I said, the concept that inhibition of insulin pathway extends lifespan was a little bit, a little bit not very acceptable for all people, as I said. So,
So can I ask, because it sounds from your description, is this the paper that came out last summer?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because I did read that one. It's quite interesting. So, which was 2005. So
2005, yes.
So you spent another couple of years then.
Yes, right.
Working on, and you were publishing during this time. I have your CV. You were publishing a good bit. I guess just not things you were excited about.
The paper before that was a result of the collaboration. So of course, we contributed the data, but those papers are not entirely done in the both laboratories. So my laboratory contributed to that paper, but my collaborator also contributed a lot to that paper. So it's a kind of the result of collaboration. But the science paper was really originated from our data, and it's a pure made in my laboratory type of paper. So that was very important for me. Anyway.
Okay. So, so you got your first rejections around 2003, 2002 then, from what you're saying?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And just kind of went back and kept refining and...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So, can you maybe? I'm sorry if I cut you off when I changed tapes before. But you were basically kind of explaining that you purified the protein, and did that help you better understand the insulin reaction?
Yes. Right.
How did that tie back together?
Mm-hmm. So, so to establish the concept that Kyoto protein functions as a hormone-like substance that inhibits insulin pathway, we really need a purified protein because we need to know whether this protein did bind to the cell surface receptor or any activity assay or any binding assay requires a purified Kyoto protein. So, we tried to made Kyoto protein in the insect cell system, but purification was really tough. So that was a major drawback of the Kyoto research in the until 2004 or something like that. So but once we got the purified protein, we can do the all necessary assays and experiments to prove that the protein indeed functions as a hormone-like substance. So that was not huge, but a very necessary breakthrough for me.
And can you maybe now, it mm-hmm. might be a good time, can you talk to me, can we step back maybe a little bit from the science mm-hmm. to some of the, in a way it sounds almost like you were not setting up your lab again because you had your equipment mm-hmm. in space, but you mm-hmm. went for, you had your set of Japanese postdocs mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. not so much mm-hmm. work, they left mm-hmm. you, it's mm-hmm. a period on your own. Mm-hmm. Who did you bring in, how did you go about doing the science next, mm-hmm. in this yeah, next yeah. period?
Right. So, yes. So I was, so there are many Japanese postdocs working in the UT Southwestern, and after I got funded from NIH, I really wanted to hire a very good postdoc and looked for, first I looked for the inside of the UT Southwestern, so somebody might be looking for a postdoctoral position. And at that time, one of the Japanese postdocs wanted to move the laboratory, and he contacted directly to me, and I. So he said he wanted to move anyway. So and yeah, actually I have currently three postdocs. Actually, two of them are promoted to instructor right now. But all of them used to work in the other laboratories in the UT Southwestern, and for various reasons they had to change the laboratory. So they were looking for. New laboratory to work for, and I had no ad put on the Nature or Science looking for the available position for postdoc, but I didn't stick on Japanese guys, but it's just a coincidence, but some people wanted to move the laboratory, and for various reasons, so family reasons, or for some people had some little conflict with his boss or something like that. But they are really experienced postdocs, and they are all PhDs, so they are very much determined to get their own paper published, and they really work very hard, and I don't need to teach pipetting how to pipetting, but rather they are much better than me in carrying out various types of experiments. So I was lucky that I could get a good experienced postdocs by accident actually. So if they, so actually this is the reprint of the science paper, and the first two authors are actually the two postdocs I got in just after I got funded from NIH. So they are very experienced, and they had techniques that I didn't have. I'm very good at mouse genetics and transgenic mice, something like that, because I learned a lot about that. But yeah, sure. And but those two postdocs are very good at protein chemistry or signal transduction analysis that I've never done before. So that was a really best match for mm-hmm. me. So I did what I can do, and they did what they can do, and they are really complementary to each other. And the after I got these two guys, the works progressed very well. And yeah, that was a major progress in my laboratory. And recently, another postdoc joined my lab, and he's an MD PhD, and he is a dermatologist actually, and he also has some reason, he has to move the laboratory. So anyway, I got him last year, and he's also working very well. So now I have and because of this paper, I promoted them from postdoc to instructor, so they are now instructor here.
So are they still in your lab, or
yes,
do they have their own?
They are working with me.
Okay. And how did bringing them in? Did that help shape your research at all? Did they bring in ideas? How did you?
Yes. So for this particular paper, the idea was already there, and they provided the very nice expertise to prove that hypothesis. But after, they are very talented. So anyway, after publishing this paper, we need to go to the next step anyway. So the next step, I mean, is to identify Kyoto receptor or Kyoto binding partner. So that's really a challenging project again. But actually one of the guys, Dr. Hiroshi Cross, the first author of this paper, he actually brought in a new idea. So actually my laboratory is currently changing direction a little bit because of his great finding. So he found that Kyoto protein binds to 5-fibroblast growth factor receptor. It's a little bit scientific thing, so it's not. Anyway, he found another protein that interacts with Kyoto protein. So, we have been looking for that kind of protein. So, Kyoto interacting protein for a long time, and he eventually found it. The receptor for the Kyoto protein. So actually Kyoto protein has a lot of functions, lot of different functions. So in this paper we described about the involvement of Kyoto to insulin pathway. But Kyoto is also involved in regulation of mineral ion homeostasis. So Kyoto protein can regulate phosphate homeostasis or calcium homeostasis. So Kyoto can regulate blood levels of phosphate and calcium. So that's a totally new function of the Kyoto protein. And actually it's very very timely manner. Maybe I should mention. Okay, so I'll tell you about how he found out the relation between Kyoto and FGF. Okay, so I said that Kyoto mutant mice shows an aging-like phenotype. Okay, and maybe 2 years ago, another knockout mouse was developed and reported that they developed aging-like phenotypes. And Hiroshi compared the phenotype of Kyoto mutant mice and the reported aging-like mice. and he found that these two are almost identical. So the gene knocked out in the reported paper was FGF23, fibroblast growth factor 23. So these two mice are exactly the same. Not simply resembling, but almost identical. So we are really surprised to this fact, because these two are, at the time, nobody knew that these two genes are related at all. So FGF23, if you knock out FGF23, mice get that aging-like syndrome, similar to clotomidin mice. So that's why, so FGF23, the name shows it's a fibroblast growth factor. So it should bind to fibroblast growth factor receptor. So FGF is a very, one of the oldest growth factors identified and very well characterized. As you can notice that there are many FGF ligands. So 23 means the 23rd ligand identified. So anyway, so because of the similarity of these two mice, he proved that, he found that, he tried to prove that CLOTO is involved in the FGF signaling pathway. So he indeed can show that CLOTO can directly bind to FGF receptor and regulate FGF23 binding to the FGF receptor. So it's a kind of cofactor that regulates FGF signaling. And this actually makes a lot of sense, because FGF23 was first identified as a factor that inhibit phosphate uptake in the kidney. So if FGF23 is excessive, actually there is a disease to produce more FGF23 in human. So it's a hereditary disorder, but such patients show phosphate wasting from the kidney, because 23 inhibit phosphate resorption from the kidney. So, and they develop rickets, osteomalacia, and such kind of bone diseases. So FGF23 was a very new, recently identified hormone that inhibit phosphate uptake in the kidney. So in the kidney and bone research field, FGF23 was really a topic in the past 1 or 2 years. And CLOTO suddenly get into this field, and CLOTO is a critical factor that regulate FGF23 function. So actually, Hiroshi and I published a paper about interaction between CLOTO and FGF23, and it will appear in JBC accelerated publication this week.
Oh, I don't have that one then.
Right, I'll print it out and give it to you. It's really long, hot topics, actually.
That is best, because you just had two papers. No, maybe that's this one. Yeah, so you've had two papers in Journal of Biological Chemistry since the science paper.
Yeah, right. The one is about the follow-up of this study. So after the JBC, one of the JBC papers showed that what happens after CLOTO inhibit insulin pathway. So they CLOTO increase resistance to oxidative stress through inhibiting insulin, something like that. So okay, that's a follow-up of that study. But this is a totally opened up the different area of the research. So I'll print out this paper and give it to you. And yeah, it will appear March 10th, so this Friday.
So they did accelerate a publication online?
Yes, it's, I think it's already available, I think.
That's
So we have been working on Kyoto and enzyme pathway, but another research direction appears very promising. So this is the Kyoto protein function on F fibroblast growth factor signaling and phosphate metabolism. So this was so. If he or she didn't notice the similarity between these mutant mice, then we couldn't notice about this fact. So it was really lucky for me to have him here. Actually, that was exactly what I wanted from a very talented postdoc. So. Maybe I'm already 46 and my brain's getting a little bit stiff, and maybe I need some fresh way of thinking or fresh viewpoint to look at Kyoto. So I was looked at Kyoto only from the aging and insulin pathway thing, but this brought me a very different viewpoint about the Kyoto protein to look at. So. Currently, I'm very busy because of this paper, because FGF23 was really a big topic in the kidney disease field and also pediatric research field. But there are lots of mysteries about FGF23 because people didn't know about Kyoto is involved in this pathway. So FGF23 is actually a very difficult hormone. So if you just add FGF23 on the cultured cell, there's no activity at all. But if you inject FGF23 in the animal, they are very active. So people assume that there's something missing in the cultured cells. That is essential to FGF23 to be functional. So we identified that missing factor was Kyoto. So if you inject FGF23 in mice, there is Kyoto in the kidney, expressed right. In the kidney. That's why FGF23 can be functional. But in culture cells, no culture cells express Kyoto. So even though they apply huge amount of FGF23, there's no activity at all. So all people wanted to know why this happened. So, but Kyoto, just adding Kyoto is necessary and sufficient to induce FGF23 activity. That
in cell culture?
In cell culture system. So this is about that. So this is actually very interesting because it can be directly applied to patient treatment. So many patients with chronic kidney disease will die because of the vascular complications like vascular calcification and the biggest problem in the management of chronic kidney disease patient is how to reduce the risk of death of such patients. So the one of the major risk factors for the chronic kidney disease patient is the vascular calcification. So actually, Kyoto mutant mice shows extensive vascular calcification and could be a very good model for kidney vascular calcification induced by chronic kidney disease. And so we are currently trying to see whether clot protein can, let's say, injection of clot protein or just maybe that would be the direct way. So inject the clot protein and see whether vascular calcification might be improved. So that's a final goal. So clot protein might be applicable to treatment of chronic kidney disease if clot protein can indeed eliminate vascular calcification. So you can inject FGF23 as well, but in chronic kidney disease patients, kidneys are disorganized and clot protein production is very much reduced in the chronic kidney disease patients. So it's possible that FGF23 injection alone may not be very effective because there's no clot produced in the kidney. So in that case, we need to add clot to remove the phosphate from the body or vascular calcification. But anyway, there are lots of potential therapeutic applications in clot. So vascular calcification is really very difficult disease, and no mechanistic insight was available at this point. The clot may provide some clue to understand the molecular mechanism of vascular calcification. Now, there are many expectations for that, such kind of stuff.
Well, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm just noticing, because I know I did give you a heads up that I would be about 2 hours. Do you want to? Mm-hmm. This might be a good time to break, and I could actually read the paper this evening too, if you want.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
And we can, because this is a really interesting area, so I can.
Yeah, it's another area of clot research. So recently came up. So
Okay. Well, so maybe then we can pick up with this.
Yeah. Okay. I'll print the paper.
Thank you.